Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our very favorite columnist and Albany bureau chief of the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
Yeah, I know, because you've really become the go-to person every Monday morning. Your wonderful column is there, and we learn stuff that we didn't know. Okay, so let's talk about the state Republicans who are now trying to tie the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, otherwise known as Get Charlie Off the MTA woes, to Cuomo to derail his reelection campaign. Well, we know that Cuomo wins basically because of New York City, and New York City is where the subways are.
That's it. And, you know, so the governor has declared that this summer will probably, he dubbed it the summer of hell for commuters. And I wrote a week or so ago that the summer of hell for commuters could turn into an electoral train wreck for Governor Cuomo back in 2018. And that's exactly what you said. There's all these problems, and if they don't get resolved, or if people don't think they're getting resolved, then Cuomo is in trouble, because in 2014, Cuomo won re-election mostly on the backs of people in New York City, Westchester County, and Nassau County. And those are the people who take the commuter rails, the subways. So if they're not happy, that could be a real, real issue for the governor moving forward. The state Republican Party recognizes this as well, and they've started already doing surveys, kind of almost like a push poll, you know, trying to tie this to him and say, how do you think he's handling the day-to-day operation of the MTA? Do you think his national ambitions are getting in the way of all these things? So they're really trying to damage him with this downstate.
So the MTA, of course, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, has appointees from different people, but he has the most appointees, right?
He does. He has a plurality. He wants the majority, but it really doesn't matter. I mean, there's no real evidence that the board has, you know, gone against him in any real way. But he wants, at the end of session, literally 24 hours before the end of session, as these issues have become more and more problematic downstate.
And he was trying to scramble out from underneath it all.
He appointed a new MTA chairman, a new old MTA chairman in Joe Loda, who is the former chairman, who's highly respected on both sides of the aisle. And then he also put in a bill that would give him control of the MTA board. It would give him the majority members. The legislature did not take it up, and no one really believes he doesn't have control of the MTA.
He has it. Yeah. And when the Second Avenue subway got inaugurated, or the spur, so-called spur, he stood up there and it sounded like he put every brick and tile in place himself.
And talked about how he pushed for them to get it done on time and under budget and everything else. You know, we made our deadlines, and that's what government does, is operate, until you had delays and train wrecks and derailments, and then it was, well, I'm not in control of the MTA, and nobody bought it. The one saving grace for the governor, that whoever runs against him, whether it's in a Democratic primary, whether it's a Republican, if these issues are still going on, the one saving grace is probably, if you polled most people down there, they would think the mayor is in control of the subway system. So it will take some doing, but you know, you figure with ads and anything else they can get, free media, any opponent of his is going to make it clear who is in charge of the MTA, the subways, the commuter rails, and if there are still problems, who should be held accountable for it.
So you mentioned a whole bunch of things I want to talk about, because elections are coming closer. And 2018, he has to run for governor again. You said if anybody runs against him in a primary, is there a scintilla of thinking that somebody might really have the ability to run against him?
I think he'll probably face a primary. How credible a primary is going to be the question. Someone from the left will run. And you hear names, you know, big names like Attorney General Eric Schneiderman or Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli.
Never happened.
They will not give up safe seats. The only way they run for governor is if the governor's numbers are so in the tank that he's either really extremely vulnerable or he decides not to seek re-election, sure, which is always a possibility. But when you look at it right now, the polls have him at his highest levels, even with all these problems, His poll numbers, his favorabilities are at their highest level of his second term, despite all the controversies that have been going on. And also, he beats any Republican opponent right now, hypothetically, by 30 points or more.
I always say to when we get Ed Cox on here or we get the minority leader in the assembly, we ask them, I always say, okay, who you got? And they haven't got anybody. It's ridiculous.
No, they have Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive, who ran for against Cuomo 3 years ago.
And got smeared.
Yeah, he got 42% of the vote, which was good for a Republican. However, I always put an asterisk on it because Astorino in total, in raw votes, got the exact same amount of votes as Carl Paladino did 4 years ago when he ran against Cuomo and when Cuomo first won. The only difference was a million people in 2014, a million fewer people came out to vote, and Cuomo got a million fewer votes. So the Republican got the standard Republican vote, but the governor got a lot less.
Ken Lovett, let's talk about the trial. Not since Kafka have we talked about the trial. It's coming, and a lot of people have been holding their breath. Fill us in.
Well, Joe Prococo is the big name on that one. That is a guy who was Cuomo's top aide. It was his campaign manager. He was someone the governor described as his father's third son. That's how tight they were. There's a bribery charge, his corruption charges, bid rigging. You have in all, I think, 8 or 9 people who are under federal indictment. One person who was also close to the Cuomo family, a guy named Todd Howe, a longtime lobbyist who used to work for Andrew Cuomo at HUD. He's already pled guilty, and he's going to be the star witness by all accounts. This could do serious damage to the governor. It's another thing that's on the horizon that, depending if the trial actually happens and people don't plead out, or depending on what comes out and whether we find out that the governor knew things that we didn't know he knew or how things happened, it certainly could hurt him. And I've said this before, while he's not been criminally implicated, the governor, all you have to do is look across the river to New Jersey and see what happened with Chris Christie with the Bridgegate, George Washington Bridge scandal. He was not criminally implicated, but, you know, two of his aides were convicted, and Christie's numbers are at the lowest levels they've ever been.
Or anybody else's have ever been. And he's at 18%. And that's before they do the polling, what he pulled on Beachgate as opposed to Bridgegate, where he got out on the beach himself after having told everybody else they couldn't go because the state was closed down.
His best line, by the way, was, "I have a residence there. If someone wants it, then they can run for governor. Let them eat cake."
My favorite of all. You're exactly right. Now, on this trial business, there have been calls for the separation of the trials. You talked about Prococo and Todd Howe, but also there are people like Elaine Calieros and others, and they want separate trials. What's that looking like?
Well, I don't think they want to be lumped in with everyone else, and they want to be able to present their case in a standout way. Calieros is going to be interesting because he's been there a long time. He knows a lot of stuff, and he's not necessarily an inner circle guy like Joe Prococo. So, you know, he doesn't have necessarily the loyalty that a Prococo might have to protect the governor. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say when all this. He adamantly defends his innocence, and he wants to go to trial. He says they said they won't settle, but we'll see what happens. But what he has to say.
But Ken Lovett, do you really think that Joe Prococo, the so-called third brother of Andrew Cuomo, will risk going to jail or having his wife go to jail?
That's going to be the question. I think that, so far as we know, he has not turned on the governor. But if the feds say we're going to go after your wife because they did not charge her, even though she had a no-show job, supposedly, that's what part of what's been accused. Who knows? They've got young kids, and whether he's going to go to prison or not for it remains to be seen. But I'm sure it's not an easy time for Joe Prococo deciding what to do.
Now, Ken, there's no secret that the Attorney General of the state of New York, Schneiderman, would love to be the governor. And right now, and he's had a couple of reversals recently. You want to talk about those?
Yeah, last week was not a good week for the Attorney General. He had a case against Senator Robert Ort of Niagara County dismissed entirely. The judge just said there wasn't enough evidence to warrant the indictment. And you don't see that too often where a case is just dismissed entirely before trial. So that was, especially against a sitting senator, so that was an embarrassment. And then there's another case a former Erie County Democratic chairman, a guy named Steve Pidgeon, who is close to Cuomo. He's close to a lot of people. He was a big player in Western New York. He's been accused federally of trying to bribe a judge. And he's also been accused by the state attorney. I should say he's been accused by the state attorney general's office of trying to bribe a judge. And they got a warrant to raid his house and his office. The problem is they were supposed to act within 10 days and they didn't. They acted within days after that. And so the evidence that they had, key evidence, email evidence that they found on his computers, is not going to be admissible according to a judge's ruling last year. So that's a big blow to that case.
So this doesn't make Attorney General Scheinman, you know, look like he knows what he's doing, right?
No, and it's really the second time that I remember there was a case out in the Rochester area where evidence and it got dismissed, the indictment got dismissed. Same kind of thing. Procedurally, they handled it poorly and it got dismissed. So I'm sure anyone who would be running against him would use that. It's certainly a blow to him. Some people say he's too focused on the national stuff, his office right now. He's been really going after Trump hard. You know, the Schneidermans kind of shrugged it off and admitted it's a bad week, but they have a record of going after public corruption that others haven't done, so...
Okay, Ken Lovett, we would be remiss if we didn't ask you to tell us what ended up at the legislature by the time they slunk out of town. What's the scorecard looking like?
It was a lot of if you go from after the budget, you know, they went into overtime, obviously. They got some stuff done at the end of the session. They left with some big things hanging out there, and they the governor called them back in a special election. A special session, and they finally finished their work. But it was a lot of extenders of laws that were expiring, primarily the law that gave the mayor of New York City control over the city school system. That was extended. The surprise there was extended for 2 years, not just the 1 year that it has been the last few years. Several dozen local taxes, sales taxes that the counties rely on, they were extended for 3 years. So that got done. A lot of the counties were worried that could wreak havoc with their budgets if it didn't get done. You know, some other things as well. It was not a fantastic end of the legislative session.
In terms of how people are getting along, you know, children, is the governor getting along with John J. Flanagan or with the Senate leader or with Hasty, the Assembly leader?
It's been feuds galore, as I wrote on Monday. Basically, the governor throughout the session was feuding a lot with Democrats, not with the Senate GOP, but was feuding with people like Hasty, the Assembly Democrats, with Thomas DiNapoli, the Democratic State Comptroller.
Well, about what? Because, you know, Tom DiNapoli is, as far as I know, is the best state office holder of all, and yet the governor won't leave him alone.
No. You know, every time DiNapoli comes out with a critical audit, the governor says it's personal, it's politics, they're doing a horrible job with it. He said that there was a scandal and there was an arrest this year that was the worst scandal in the state of the year,
let alone the
Prococo scandal.
Yeah, a bunch of nonsense, a sort of low-level guy.
He wasn't low-level, but he certainly, I don't think it rises to the level of a Joe Prococo.
No.
And so the governor's been feuding with Mayor de Blasio. You've got the Senate Democrats who have been feuding with the independent Democrats, these 8 breakaway Dems who side with the Republicans. You have the independent Democrats feuding with Simcha Felder, who's a Brooklyn Democratic senator who actually sits with the Republicans. So they've been fighting. You've got the Senate Republicans fighting with the Assembly Dems and Mayor de Blasio. So it's been a mess. I will say at the end, though, it kind of turned around a little. You saw the governor kind of, maybe he felt the pressure from the party, but he kind of cut deals with Carl Hasty, the Assembly Speaker, at the very, very end to get some stuff done, and worked with the mayor to get the extension for mayoral control. So that kind of turned around
control
a little
of the
bit.
Schools, yeah.
Of the schools, right. So that turned around a little bit, but it was an ugly session. It really started in December when the governor went back on his promise, according to the legislature, to approve a pay raise. They came in angry, and it just... You know, as one person said to me, it's a good thing they're off for the next 6 months, so you know they can all cool down.
We've been talking. Your colleagues at the New York Times ran a huge piece on whether there should be a constitutional convention, and I am so split on this one. I can't tell you. I'm quite sure, based on my years of doing this kind of thing, that you'll have a constitutional convention, you'll spend millions of dollars on it, it'll be a big show, very little will happen, and the two things which I think should happen, which are, the idea of initiative and referendum in this state, that would make it worth having a constitutional convention, and then, of course, term limits, which the people desperately want. They're not going to do something like that at a constitutional convention, so why have it?
Well, that's one of the arguments. I think a lot of people are split. You've got a lot of the interested parties who are in government who oppose it strongly. That includes the legislative leaders, the unions, the labor unions, who say they fear that their labor protections would be cut or potentially cut at a kind of constitutional convention. You've got a coalition of over 100 people that have brought together anti-abortion and pro-abortion forces who are opposing it. So there's a lot of opposition. And then on the other side, you've got the government reform groups who say, you know, Albany has shown no inclination to fix itself and that this is the only way to do it.
But explain to everybody, Ken, that the political apparatus who brought us the bums in the legislature are likely to bring us the people who are the bums in the constitutional convention.
That's the governor's argument. The governor says he supports a constitutional convention, but only if the delegate process is spelled out. He doesn't think people who are involved in the current system should be allowed to run as delegates and be elected as delegates. Because what happens is every 20 years, and this is the year, voters get to decide, should we have a constitutional convention? The last time was in 97 and it got voted down. If the voters said yes, then next year the voters are asked to elect a slate of delegates to actually run and participate in the convention. And then the year after that, 2019, they would actually hold the convention.
I recently talked to John Faso, who's on the hot seat in the 19th district because he voted for Trump's awful health care bill. Did I say that? And Elise Stefanik up in the North Country, the congresswoman there, they're both under tremendous pressure. People are lining up to run against them. Are they in trouble?
I think, it's going to be an interesting midterm election. Certainly,
2018.
It's going to be an interesting midterm election. You know, it depends where we are with Trump. It depends what happens with health care. There's a lot of time, you know, as we've seen, a week is a long time in this atmosphere. So we'll see. But certainly the vulnerable. And now you have the governor who has put together some kind of effort that is targeting six of them, including Faso and Stefanik and Chris Collins out in Buffalo area, that they say for the first time the governor is going to be actively involved in trying to, you know, turn the House Democratic, and that would include targeting at least six seats in New York.
Maybe, as we often say about the governor, watch what he does, not what he says.
Exactly. That means, is he going to raise the money? You know, honestly, in a lot of those districts, you may not want him campaigning or be aligned to him because he's not popular in the six districts they've targeted. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly the strategy and how far they go. But certainly, yeah, the congressional races are going to be really hard fought. And if I was Faso as a freshman, if I was Stefanik, who's not exactly a veteran, I would, I'd be worried.
So now, as long as we're on the Faso subject, he and a partner from the Buffalo region, Representative Collins, come up with an idea that they should move as part of, I think, the cover that he got for voting for the Health Care Act, that the state should pay all of the Medicaid bills. Now, he denies that that's what was going on there, but it doesn't much matter. That's what is happening. But I'm a little confused. If you take the money from the counties and you say, you don't have to raise that money, you can lower people's tax bills and make the state do it or pay for all of Medicaid, as it happens in most states, then doesn't your bill go down in one place but up in the other?
Well, that depends, because the Faso and Collins argue that in a budget that's anywhere between $154 and $163 billion,
In New York,
the state budget, that you should easily be able to find $2.5 billion in savings that this would cost, that their amendment would cost, or maybe it's $3.5 billion, excuse me, and you should be able to pay for it. Actually, it's $2.3 billion, and you should be able to pay for that. So they say, no, it shouldn't do that. But there's also no guarantee that if you take that money away from the localities, they'll actually lower taxes. They could use it for other things as well.
Well, but Faso is adamant about this position. Mm-hmm. The governor is even more adamant about hating Faso, and hating is a strong word. But, you know, Collins, he is really after those guys, and he's taking this personally.
He's taking it personally. He proposed, or he says he would propose, if this goes through and the so-called Faso-Collins Amendment is in both versions of the health care bill, the House and the Senate bills, and the governor said if that goes through, he is going to try and push through a tax, which would be hard to get through the Senate, but he would call it the Faso-Collins federal tax that would basically be put on the county taxes, the county's property taxes, and it would be listed as Faso-Collins federal tax, so the state could recoup the $2.3 billion it would have had this amendment not gone through. So the governor is actually saying he would raise taxes. And of course, that's led Faso and Collins to say, go ahead. I mean, you know, we'll just argue that you would rather raise taxes and be a tax and spend liberal than someone who can reduce spending by, $2.3 billion in a $160 billion budget.
Now, what about naming that bridge for Mario Cuomo? What about that?
Well, the governor pushed that through at the very end. He sent up a bill, and oddly, we were talking about relationships and who's feuding and who's not feuding. John Flanagan, the Senate GOP leader, sponsored it and brought it to the floor.
Why?
Because he and the governor are getting along. The governor very much wanted this. They needed stuff from the governor. So he pushed it through before the end of the regular session. Carl Hastie, the Democrat, said, no, we're not going to take that up now. It's not an emergency. They would have had to do it with what's known as a message of necessity, where the governor says you could suspend the 3 days waiting period for a bill to age and take it up immediately. So Hastie was mad about what was going on. He felt ganged up upon on the issue of mayoral control and some of the other issues. So he just said no, and they went home. And when the governor called them back and everything was settled, lo and behold, the assembly passed the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge, much to the consternation of former Governor Malcolm Wilson's family, who, Malcolm Wilson was a Republican governor who followed up Rockefeller. And Mario Cuomo himself pushed for the naming of the Tappan Zee Bridge after Malcolm Wilson. It's actually known as the Malcolm Wilson, Tappan Zee Bridge. And the governor got rid of not only Malcolm Wilson, but the Tappan Zee part of it as well. It'll just be the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge.
So I got 2 minutes, but if in fact the federal health law, the Trump Care, passes, will Andrew Cuomo do something in New York State that will replicate what was going on?
If what has been proposed goes through, you're talking about $7 billion or more, according to the governor and the comptroller's office, that the state would lose. They say healthcare would be devastated. So they would have to come back and do something. They would have to find a way to either make up that money. They claim they're not going to let the healthcare system be devastated. So they'd either have to raise taxes to make up for this money or find revenue in another way. But I don't think they would accept all the cuts. They would just have to pay for it themselves.
So do you ever take a vacation at the end of this year, at the end of this session?
I go away sometimes.
Are you looking forward to it?
I do.
What will we do without you?
The column will be there every Monday.
Oh, you'll do it from vacation?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's something. Okay, well, our guest has been the inimical Ken Lovett, the Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, and a constant part of this show because he knows more about this than anybody, and that's why we love to have him. Thank you so much for being on the Capital Connection this week.
Thank you.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.